When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
All of this power came from the pain. I put in twice the work, but I never complained.
Curry in his bag. Got it. The Warriors starting to put together one of those prolific third quarters. Curry! Cooking! Launches! The Warriors have responded. They have flat out outworked the Boston Celtics.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Good morning, guys.
What up, baby?
What's happening?
You know,
how you sound stuffy, Max. What you been doing?
Key, I've had a cold that keeps, like, the thing goes away for the most part. I'm like, okay, I'm better. And then comes back. I haven't been healthy in like a month.
Oh, you're healthy.
Where's the Lysol when you need it?
No, it's okay. I'm just breathing all over, spitting all over Key's mic. It's all good.
That's okay. It'll be baked in Lysol when I get back.
It is so funny the way he does that. He comes smart. I'm not arguing against him. It sprays down the whole thing. As soon as he sits down in the chair, when he's on the East Coast, sprays it all down.
Yeah. I want to create one of those little barrier plexiglasses here between us, between
Smart.
The show. Yes.
Smart. Yeah, I will.
Just, you know, doesn't open the sides. You know, it leaves all the sides open. Just this little. Right here.
Jay, it's so funny you said that. I went to a restaurant with my family on Saturday. And we walk in, and they have the exact what you're saying, right? Every little seat and everything have the little thingy. I'm like.
Doesn't do anything.
I'm walking to the restroom and I'm walking right past you.
Okay, let me hand you your drink around the plexiglass. Oh, here you go. There it goes right there.
But you know, even before the pandemic, I used to like shaking hands and stuff. What we should do is like what the Japanese do, just bow to
No,
each
we're
other.
Full on.
Like,
we're
we
back.
Don't need to be touching
we're back.
Everybody.
We're back
just
to
be
shaking
touching.
Hands. We're back to shaking hands.
I like the one good thing hopefully we could take out of this is people need to stop touching each other. Just
to
say
shaking.
What's up.
The shaking hand game the other day, Jay, somebody tried to shake my hand when I left New York in the airport, right? So I gave him this one first.
Mm-hmm. The elbow.
He talked a little bit longer. You know, I'm being nice.
Then the exit
then,
handshake.
Then he gave me he tried to shake my hand again, and I gave him the pal. Mm-hmm. And then we talk a little bit longer. Then he tried to stick the hand. I'm like, yo, man, I ain't touching no hands right now, dog.
How many different ways can I show you we're not shaking hands? The worst is when you fist bump, like, you know, 50,000 people, and then one dude, when you're not expecting it, right, shoots out their hand. So then automatically your hand shoots out. Now, everyone you gave a pound to because you wouldn't shake the hands looking at you like, what's wrong with me?
I went to a birthday party this weekend, and I'm pounding, elbowing everybody, and then I watch everybody. My daughter shaking everybody's hand. I'm like, oh, well.
Right.
It's too late then.
I'm already in it now.
Yeah, she's rubbing. Rubbing off. It's so funny. Speaking, I want to move on from here, but you said birthday party.
I saw your birthday party.
Hey, relax. Hey. My daughter had her birthday party. And so my sister showed up. My sister double masked. So she sat down and ate and had to take her mask off. Wait, Jay. I said.
How does that work?
I said, sis, come on now. Like, what are you doing?
I got it.
The world we live in now, Max. Now.
That's it. Well, fellas, that was a lot of fun. But it's time to get to Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So, Steph, Jay, try and tell you about Steph.
Oh, you are.
Well, now I am.
Are you feeling
what?
Better today?
I don't. Narratives. I don't write them. I just read them.
No,
that's
you make
right.
them up.
I don't make them
you
up.
Make
I
them
just
up.
Tell you how it is.
You make them up.
Here's Steph Curry. He's a guard for the Golden State Warriors, Jay, with Lisa Salters, the great Lisa Salters, on the impact that Draymond Green had on Game 2.
just being himself, finding different ways to impact the game on both ends of the floor. Like, sometimes it shows up in the stat sheet across the board. Sometimes you just feel his energy and his focus and his passion. And that gives us a lot of life. So I know he took game one personally in terms of getting back to his standard, and it was great to see.
So Ben Wallace told me something back in 2000 that really kind of shaped my mindset about the NBA and players, right? He said, Jay Will, get in where you fit in. So job description, knowing your role and elevating your role is what gets you paid a lot of money. So job description for Draymond Green, irritant, right? You talk about agitator. You talk about a guy who provoker, gets people engaged. Like, that is who he is. That's the epitome of who he is.
Provocateur.
Provocateur, yeah. Right? The epitome. First possession last night. Jump ball on Al Horford. Rips the ball from him. Rolls him down the ground. Then you think about following up. Gets a technical foul with Grant Williams. Agitates Grant Williams. Baits Jason Tatum into a foul. Has Jaylen Brown down on the ground. Leaves his leg hanging on his head, right? Can't remove his leg. Jaylen Brown reacts. He pushes him back. There you go. Marcus Smart engaging him. He engaged everybody on the Boston Celtics team. And now there's a lot of reasons why Boston lost this game, but Draymond Green is one of the main reasons why Golden State won this game, because you felt the energy from the first possession of the damn ball game. And that matters, because it felt like in game one, Golden State got a little bit punked when Jaylen Brown and Boston made that run. So right from the table, it was like, hey, I'm engaging everybody psychologically. You're all going to engage with me, and I'm going to take your mind away from what you really need to be focused on, Key.
Yeah, you add that Draymond Green, but then you add in the three guys on the Celtics in Smart, White, in Horford, who didn't do anything at all compared to game one, with the guys on the Golden State Warriors, like a Draymond Green, who came with the energy, the level that you talked about, the intimidation factor that you talked about, and then Steph Curry just knocking down buckets left and right. And although Klay Thompson didn't do anything significant, he still hit a couple key buckets from time to time. Jordan Poole late in the game extended the lead by doing the things that he was supposed to be doing. Looney added his key to things. And that's the same thing that they basically did in game one. The difference, in my opinion, Jay, you're the expert on the basketball side on this show, is that the three guys for the Boston Celtics didn't show up. And when you don't show up, you don't get the same thing that you got in game one. Jason Tatum did essentially whatever he wanted to do out there, the same thing, kind of thing that he did in game one. The difference was those three guys didn't contribute, and that's why they wind up going down 107-88.
So Horford, White, and Smart in game one combined for 65 points. In game two, they combined for 16 points.
Oh, they defended Horford last night.
Okay. Like, and I'm giving Golden State a lot of credit. Obviously, their defensive tenacity was on a higher level than what it was, and it was sustained throughout the entire course of the game. But you got to give me more than 2 points, Al Horford. Marcus Smart, you have to give me more than 2 points. Like, you know, Derek White gave you
2 points.
Yeah, gave you 12 points off the bench.
How old is Horford? 36?
I don't care if he's 50.
But what I'm saying is, if you sag off him and give him open looks, he's going to hit some shots. If the idea is we're not going to let Horford score, I don't know what
Max.
But Max.
Max, it's the
shots.
NBA, man. Come on, stop.
He took four shots. Marcus Smart took 6 shots in 25 minutes.
Yeah, you got to be more aggressive.
All right, Robert Williams, 1 shot, 2 points. You had 3 starters with 2 points. 3.
Jay, you played in the NBA, man. I ain't never played in the NBA, but please tell me.
You don't
got
to play
difficult.
In the NBA, kid, to
but
know
please
what you're talking
tell
about.
Me. I know, but please tell me it's not that difficult to get more than 2 points, man.
That's what I'm saying. That's what you, like, there's a level where, look.
Is it an issue just of aggression?
You know, Stephen A. Smith said complacency last night. I don't know.
Because I thought they were going to win in the first half. In the first half of the game, I'm like, oh, damn.
Jaylen Brown was boogieing in the first quarter.
Yeah,
and
especially early Jaylen Brown. And then Tatum, I was thinking, yo, the Warriors about to go down. I still wouldn't have thought the series is over. But the Warriors might go down 0-2. Because especially I have not been accustomed to seeing Steph Curry in second halves of finals series without KD take over. And the question last night was, could Steph Curry do it? Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise, and we're going to get into that next. But first, Jay has this from FanDuel.
You can have that argument next, Jay.
Always comes back to it, doesn't it?
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Most days, but on Sundays at 4:30, we do a call, a show-wide Zoom call.
We do a lot of calls.
Yes, but on Sundays at 4:30, we do a show, you know, because we're prepping for Monday. We just start getting ideas out there, what we think about stuff and everything, and so we're in the middle of our Zoom call, and all of a sudden we hear this.
I always thought when the NBA had the lockout season, they were at their best. When they played.
I'm going to undo all y'all lights in y'all rooms because y'all don't do them to leave y'all lights on. Expect for me to pay for them. I'm sorry, man. I didn't even.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I just got my water bills. Like, what are y'all doing?
All I'm saying, James, if you leave a room, turn the light off when you leave the damn room. That's
I'm on my ESPN call. Jen, I didn't realize they wasn't mute. Be quiet. I was telling London that I'm going to unscrew all the light bulbs in their rooms because every light is going to hurt.
Well,
we room.
Have additional content, James.
Oh, y'all thought that's funny, huh?
Yeah,
it's true, though, man.
I mean, it's key. You went into full dad mode in the middle of the Zoom on your kids.
Well, man, look, at the end of the day, we're headed out to dinner. Or to brunch, better yet. It was brunch because it was 1:30, 4:30 our time. 4:30 your time, 1:30 my time. And I had been telling them, all right, it's time to go for 15 minutes. And I usually, you know, I try to walk around and just make sure everything is turned off the way it needs to be. No stoves are on, nothing, you know, nothing crazy. And I happened to just go upstairs to the room. And they got every damn light on in every room. Closet lights, room lights, bathroom lights, hallway to the bathroom lights. You know, it's like, come on, seriously?
It's like that commercial where you turn into your parents. Like, what is it about fathers? We hate when the lights are left on.
It's not even that.
No, it's not even that. Man, I don't want to pay the damn bill.
It's when the light is on and they see it on and they walk right by it.
Yeah.
Dude, I will turn all my, Jay, I'll turn all my lights off in my house and be in the one room where we're watching TV or whatever, in the family room, the lights are on. Everywhere else, there's no lights. I'll leave and move around or something, come back. Every damn light on in the house for no reason at all. I mean, it drives me crazy, and I continue to keep telling them, in a minute, we ain't going to have no lights. We're going to be like one of those, you know, whatever you call us people.
Light bulbs.
Yeah, I'm going to unscrew their light bulbs, but we're going to be like those people that we ain't going to have no gas. We're going to have to use wood
for our food. I got another one for you, Keith. I got another one for you.
Summertime, you can be on a homestead.
Summertime, you got the AC on, but you got the windows open. How are you going to have the windows open with the AC on?
Close the door. We're not trying to air condition the whole neighborhood.
You're right.
Man,
it don't work.
You know those rooms I'm talking about, Max.
Pick one.
Jeez.
Sometimes it's a fine line between good defense or turnover offense. Stolen by Curry. Curry 1-on-4, 2-on-4. Pulls from the top for three and hits it.
That's amazing. He just keeps working on his game, his strength, his conditioning year after year, and it's a pleasure to watch him play.
Keyshawn, J. Willimax, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, ESPN 2, the ESPN app. Download the app. See, play ESPN to pop up on your smart speaker, and you can, of course, download the podcast. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Guys, you could say, oh, the media narrative, this and that. I never think that I write a script for a player or anything like that. I think they write the script. I just read the script.
And, are you happy with the script?
Well, Steph is one of the greatest players of all time. When people like Jay Will, whose basketball opinion you have to take very seriously, say when it's all said and done, he's going to be a top 10 player of all time, I think to myself, hold on. Without KD, like with KD on the Warriors team, everyone had their chest out because there's no way you could beat that team. You had another MVP all-time great to Steph and Clay and Trey. It's over. It's a wrap, man. Done. On the non-KD teams, where Steph is clearly the best player, and you need juice in that fourth quarter at home in a finals game. There have been too many games that I've noticed where that hasn't happened. And I wanted to see Steph in a finals. Like, for example, last 4.5 minutes of game 7, obviously fourth quarter at home, 73-win team. They don't score a single point.
You're talking about back in 2015.
In 16, yeah. 15, very lucky that the second and third best players can't play. They can't show up on the court. And there have been, since then, I'm watching what happens with Steph. So, game 1, oh my God, my texts are blowing up. Steph, he hits 6 threes, da-da-da. I get it. Let's see what happens in the second half. And, of course, nothing. Nothing happens, and they lose at home. Now it's game 2. And I said on my Max Facts, Jay, on this just in, 2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, I said Steph's going to take over second half of game 2. I want him to do it, by the way, and I think he's due. But I got to tell you, when I'm watching the game, I'm like, oh, damn, the Celtics might mess around and win this game. And to Steph's credit, here comes the second half of, if it's not a must-win game, it's a pretty damn good idea to win game, down already 0-1 at home. No KD on the team. Klay not playing well. They needed something. Steph stepped up and looked like Steph Curry in the second half, dancing around, taking deep threes, sidestepping guys, dancing on them. Like, it looked like Steph. And they won the game.
I mean, the first game he looked like Steph, too, by the way.
Not late in the game. Well, unless you think looking like Steph late in the game in the finals is missing a lot of shots and stuff, that did happen.
I think he looked a little bit gassed, but I didn't – my biggest takeaway from game number one wasn't that – Steph let his team down when it mattered the most. I didn't think they got anything from anybody else.
My big takeaway in game one, I hear what you're saying, but it's like, well, Steph was really good early in the game.
But Max,
and then in crunch time, he won his good.
You go into games with narratives, and you want to see that narrative debunked throughout the course of the game. I go into games thinking about what the overall narrative might be, but still letting the game reveal the narrative to me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah,
interesting that Steph Curry is third on a scoring list in the first two playoff games in the finals behind Michael Jordan twice. It was Jordan, Steph Curry, then LeBron James. That's interesting.
Well, so, Keith, if you're
63 points in his first two NBA Finals games. The next closest player has 31 points in Wiggins. Just let me finish, Max. Mm-hmm. Fifth player over the last 25 years to score twice as many points as the next closest. 34 years old, 6'3 guard. Averaging 32 points per game. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, it's when you watch the gravity, the attraction that he has on the court last night, there were probably 90% of possessions where I saw two or three guys.
Man, they was coming at him.
Last night is – if you're trying
same
to say
game
I'm not
one,
giving
by
him,
the way.
If you're saying I'm not trying to give him credit for last night, the opposite. I'm saying, yup, no. That's what I'm talking about. But let's break down to 63 points. He had more points game one than in game two. Where did he play better? Just be honest about it. Where did he play better? Which Steph would you rather have had? Game one Steph, who's hitting all the open looks in the first quarter, or game two?
Max, you would rather have Steph in game two because he finished strong and his legs was underneath him. He didn't have a rest of 5-6 days. He just had a rest of a couple days. So it was a totally different look than game one.
Mm-hmm. And can I tell you why?
Oh, I agree with
can
that.
Can I tell you why it happened, Max? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what Boston's doing, but they kept targeting Al Horford. I mean, Al Horford, if we talk about Draymond Green getting punished and soft closeouts and being somewhat lazy on the defensive end in game one, we got to call that out for Al Horford in game two because Steph kept finding ways to get Al Horford on him. Yep. And Al Horford cannot settle and be in drop coverage.
Steph Curry.
You can't do that off ball screens. Like, I'm going to do a breakdown on Get Up where it's like three or four possessions. I'm like, yo, Al, you got to get out there. Like, you got to push up on these ball screens and force Steph to try to beat you off the dribble because if he comes off a ball screen or if you switch on him, then you got to press him.
But he's kind of – wouldn't you say, Jay, though, he would be kind of – in no man's land yes. because if he pushes up on him and he blow by him, so I think he was in one of those situations where there's nothing I could do.
Yeah, but Keon, once
Horford is on Steph, you win.
But I want to be in no man's land. I want to force him to drive. I want to force him to be a decision maker, and I'd rather him take a two than a three.
Well, but if he becomes a decision maker and all of a sudden he drives and you collapse and he kick, now you don't know if he kick in the clay. I mean, you don't know if he kick in the Wiggins. You don't know if he kick in the Jordan Poole in the corner.
But there's nothing that could be worse.
I'll take my chances on the other guys more so than Steph.
I get it, but that's still poison, right? Because Wiggins obviously can knock it down. Clay, you already know what that is. Catch and shoot, it's ridiculous. And then Jordan Poole, all of a sudden, he gets hot and he becomes a mini Steph. So, I guess there's nothing you can do is what I'm saying. It's just nothing they can do.
Right. But pick your poison. In other words, the worst poison is, wait, you're going to let Steph wide open with Horford playing drop coverage on him. That's the worst outcome you could have, right? Better to pick a different poison. I'll say this. Steph, I want to get back to it. 29 points last night, 34 game one.
Yes.
So when people just point, look at the 63 points, I don't care about that. Game two is what I'm talking about. In the second half of the game that you need to win against a team that's beating you and has already beaten you game one, in the finals, on your home floor, do you show up? By the way, when the odds are not overwhelmingly in your favor, when there is no KD.
But they all showed up, Max.
I get it, Key, but there have been too many
games.
They
all didn't show up in game one.
But it's Steph's team. Key, what I'm saying is there have been too many games in Steph's career where I was looking for that, and I didn't find it. But last night, it was there. The reason the Warriors won is the second half of the game, right? Although I appreciate your Draymond points, and probably that feeds into it. But it's because Steph, when they needed him to in the finals in the second half, was the best player on the floor. So that's what I'm looking for.
So is the reason why Boston lost because Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown didn't come through in the second half?
No. No, I would not say that.
So you don't hold the other team's best player as accountable as you hold Steph?
No, I don't. We're not talking about Jason Tatum being a top 10 all-time player.
Look, think about it, though, Max. Jason Tatum had 21 points in the first half and 7 in the second half.
Yeah.
He didn't show up.
I don't hear that big narrative, though, like Jason Tatum didn't show up.
Because, guys, this is the first finals he's played in. We have to wait for the story to emerge. Steph in 15 and 16.
But I hear what you're saying.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's already happened.
But Steph had 34 in the first game.
He did.
And he didn't play as well in the second half.
Right.
So it's Jason Tatum didn't play well at all in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all I'm saying
is he set the finals record for assists.
But scoring-wise,
He didn't score.
He played solid defense
just keep
and
the same
assists.
A little bit.
I do not have the same exact energy for Tatum that I have for Steph.
I understand
because,
they're different.
Because Steph is – look, Tatum, first finals game, couldn't score, contributed another way. Got his scoring going in the second game. Let's see how this unfolds for Tatum. But Steph Curry is being talked about by Jay Will as top 10 player potentially of all time.
Yes.
So, and we have a much bigger book on Steph's finals performances. Yes. And if we're going to sit here and pretend that there isn't something about the second half of finals games when their teams are evenly matched without KD – come on, man. We know there's something. So he did it last night. I'm celebrating that. He did it. But, you know, like, that's what I'm talking about.
Bad celebration, Max. It's a bad celebration.
It's a bad celebration. He came through in the second half of a finals game.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max.
I said yesterday this was a legacy moment for Ja Morant coming up. And I'm telling you guys, last night, it was block office.
Oh, he was ridiculously block office.
He was block office. You know what, right, about that.
Block office, Jay.
He just combined block buster and box office.
Yes.
Jordan Poole on skates. Oh, Lord.
Jay, I have no idea what block office is. That must be Duke English or something. But
blockbuster. What? I said block office.
Yeah, you said you talk box office and blockbuster.
You didn't even realize you said block office. I said it again, and you talk about, yeah, he was dealing and willing.
I'm coming in hot.
I like how Key is on you, and then he says dealing and wheeling. It's wheeling and dealing.
First things first. Sometimes in the mornings,
yes,
it's not firing like I would like for it to.
You know, not just for you, Jay, for us all.
Yeah, it's it happens from time to time. Late night games, early mornings. You might get Key and I saying some. You ever
hear me? You just heard it. You ever hear me try to do a Sports Center read at 6:30? Yeah, go ahead, Key.
But I was going to say that's the best sports talk radio in the morning. Is not trying to be perfect. We say what we say, and it is what it is. You know what the hell I meant.
Right. Isn't that the main point
block
of language
office,
is
baby.
To communicate the idea?
I got to tell you.
Hey, look, I'm not standing
block
up.
Office every day, too.
I'm not standing in front of 1,500 people at a convention in Las Vegas to have to speak the King's English, so it is what it is.
Wheeling and dealing in block office.
Hey, Quinn Snyder resigned on Sunday. So this is the head coach of the Utah Jazz. And Donovan Mitchell, their best player, is described as, and this is a quote, unsettled, unnerved, and wondering what it means for the franchise's future. This is what sources told our very own Adrian Wojnarowski. Donovan Mitchell considered Quinn Snyder a significant part of, you know, his thought process in terms of committing to a 5-year max extension in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
See, for me, it would have been the money. Been all that money. That would have been
me and you both, right, Max?
Yeah, right. I'm saying, Quinn, probably you're here. That's great. Hey, Key, but if someone else is there,
that's
the
great
check
too.
Is the same.
Nah.
Quinn Snyder's decision has left Mitchell, and this is a quote, surprised and disappointed. Sources told Woj. Mm. Let's talk about this, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
What does all this mean?
Look, frankly, I've known Quinn Snyder since I was 16 years old. He recruited me at Duke. I think he is a brilliant mind basketball-wise. I think, obviously when you think about it, he has 372 wins, which are the second most by a head coach in Jazz history behind Jerry Sloan, who was a Hall of Famer. They've been trying to woo him back for a minute to sign an extension. So him turning the job down – to me, indicates, like, this team needs to be blown up. Like, I don't see any other factor behind it other than it doesn't work in Utah. It doesn't. And if that's Mike Conley, if that's Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench, you know, this team had a 3-1 lead a couple years ago. They lose that lead in the bubble. So they've had the talent. They just haven't been able to get over the hump. Now, look, you bring in D-Wade, part of the new ownership group, okay, to become closer to Donovan Mitchell, to build a relationship with Donovan Mitchell. This is somebody with a championship pedigree that has built a franchise down in Miami on his shoulders. I don't see them letting go of Donovan Mitchell. I see them letting go of Rudy Gobert, the Defensive Player of the Year, way before they let go of Donovan Mitchell. Now, if Donovan Mitchell wants to be somewhere else, Key, then he needs to state that. But Donovan Mitchell also not backing Quinn Snyder and not saying anything publicly lets me kind of know, like, what else is going on there in Utah? Because if Donovan Mitchell really liked Quinn Snyder and felt that way, you know, typically key franchise players come out and they speak about, I don't like that decision. Or how are we dealing with this? Who else are we replacing? And what other personnel?
Instead of after the fact saying, I am shocked and unnerved.
He didn't say that. That's what we're saying, word from him.
Right.
But if you're a star player, LeBron James has spoken about, okay, like, I don't like, or LeBron James didn't say anything about Frank Vogel. Okay. That kind of gives you an indication that he was part of that decision. Is that same with Donovan Mitchell?
But, Jay, I know Quinn Snyder won a lot of games in Utah, and every year they seem to be in the playoffs, hanging around and in the hunt. But outside of the bubble, they really haven't pushed the envelope, right?
Unless I'm missing something. You're right. They let you down every year.
Am I missing something?
No, you're right.
Okay, so no matter who it is at the helm in Utah, they're never going to get back. And I don't want to say never. It doesn't seem like they're going to get back to the Karl Malone, Stockton, B. Russ.
Which also didn't get over the hump, by the way, Key. They also didn't win one.
But that team was homegrown. Mm-hmm. That's the only way, and I'll say it again, and I'll continue to say it again until I turn blue in the face, which would, you know, is going to be kind of hard. But small market teams have to grow organically because it's very difficult to lure high-priced talent to cities like that. It's just hard to do.
Especially when they close at like 8 p.m. or whatever, you know, like
8 p.m. Right?
It closes down early.
It's just hard when you think about it, Jay. And you played in this league, Portland, hard to lure free agents.
Utah's different.
Utah's hard. I mean, it's hard. Milwaukee is hard. Even though they was able to make a trade for Jrue Holiday, Giannis and Middleton. It's homegrown.
Who was the forward that signed with Milwaukee maybe 8 years ago, and it was like for $15 million a year? And I when that happened, I thought, that's the first time I can remember. He wasn't even like an A-type, you know, top free agent, but he was solid. I was like, that's the first time I can remember a dude signing for that kind of money in a market like Milwaukee. You know, Key is right. You either get drafted there or they trade for you. You don't normally sign there.
So this is just my opinion. And, you know, I've known a lot of players that have played in Utah that tell me they're not the most fond of the city. I think the city's incredible. I've never lived there. I don't know what that daily lifestyle is, Key. And this is, once again, only subjective, right? A couple of things that you hear around the league as it relates to Donovan Mitchell is, you know, when we went through a lot of George Floyd stuff and Black Lives Matter, a lot of that was delicate for some people in Utah, right? How things were dealt with as it relates to Rudy Gobert. There were some issues there between him and Donovan Mitchell. I mean, there was a game, Key, where Donovan Mitchell only passed the ball to Rudy Gobert once. I don't give a damn what nobody says. If we're all on the basketball court together, Key, just by default, I'm going to pass the ball to you at least four or five times.
Come on.
So by one time, like, that is deliberate. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff about how they're managing all that. Personally, I'm not sure if Donovan Mitchell is the fondest of Utah. Now, he got a bag of money, right? But we all know how this goes, Key. If a player does not want
to
be someplace.
No, $200 million, I don't give a damn if you're on the moon.
100%.
By yourself.
I'm playing on the moon. Give me that astronaut suit.
So, I don't know whether Donovan Mitchell wants to stay in Utah, wants to leave Utah. I'm just pointing towards, and I have not spoken to D. Mitch, I'm just pointing towards some of the signs that you hear from the inner talks around the league centered around him and the Utah Jazz.
One of the things, guys, I was thinking, like, if Gordon Hayward never gets hurt and you can add Donovan Mitchell and you have, like, for a market like Utah, for it to work and to make a championship run for real, they have much less of a margin for error. You know, you can't, everything has to go right. It didn't. It's time to break it up, it looks
like.
But
even with Gordon Hayward getting hurt, he bolted. He didn't stay.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But if you had a guy like Hayward there at his best with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert, and they're all getting along, you have a shot.
Quinn Snyder's a smart dude. I'm trying to tell you, I've spoken to him. He's very aware of circumstances and situations around him. For him not to sign an extension is a red flag for me that something isn't being done right in Utah. He sees there's trouble. And by the way, he's going to land another job. Like, he'll land another job. Oh, big yeah. time.
Is there anything
quickly?
Is there anything open right now, Jay?
I mean, Charlotte is still open, but he wouldn't be. But I mean, even if he took a year off.
No, I know the Lakers and Sacramento is done. I just didn't know what else would be open when you said that.
Charlotte's
the only one that's left.
I mean, he'll get another job. So
within a year or two, something will open up. And if he's as smart as you're saying, Jay, and he's a very good coach, I think, then the right thing will come along and he'll grab it.
I mean, the question that it comes down to is, can Donovan Mitchell be a lead guard on a team? I think he can be. I think circumstances need to be correct.
Can we be honest about this for a second?
Can I ask you a germ-spreading question, Jay?
Sure.
Do you think that Donovan Mitchell has a different relationship with Quinn Snyder? The reason I ask you that is because when Max says something will come up, something will be open. You guys are sitting in New York.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is an East Coast guy. Could Quinn Snyder be sitting
– package deal. Yeah.
Waiting, and then maybe Donovan slide there. Could that be something?
I have no idea. All I know
I know you don't. I'm just saying, could it be?
Donovan Mitchell Sr. is the personnel director for the New York Mets. He was born and raised in the Connecticut Greenwich area here, very close to New York. There are a lot of those type of similarities. I don't know if that equates to the New York Knicks yet.
Hey, Frank,
but a lot of people have been doing that for
Frank
a while.
Frank Isola, Yes Network, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, Around the Horn is with us now. Frank, Jay asked the question, can Donovan Mitchell be the lead guard on a championship caliber team? At his height, my thought is he's an tremendous player. I'd love Donovan Mitchell. But given his height, I think you got to shoot it a little better than him, right, to be the number one guard on a championship-caliber team, Frank?
It's funny that you bring up his height. A lot of people don't talk about that a lot. He is a bit undersized. I tend to agree with you. And I like Donovan Mitchell, but he's also one of these guys, whenever he has a game, we have to hear about how the conversation he had with Dwayne Wade before the game, and Dwayne Wade told him to do this. Then he has a lot of stinkers in the playoffs as well. So for whatever reason, that partnership with him and Rudy Gobert has done well during the regular season. But I thought last year, if you go back to the playoffs, remember, the Clippers had to beat them twice without Kawhi Leonard. I mean, they were in a perfect position to the very least get to the conference finals, and it didn't happen. And remember another thing, too. With Danny Ainge taking on a bigger role in Utah, you know Danny is always thinking big, looking to make big moves. I think Utah is going to be one of these teams that's going to be doing a lot of that this summer.
Frank, if you were the Utah Jazz, understanding a little bit of the history with Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, even though Rudy Gobert is the Defensive Player of the Year multiple times, do you keep these two together? Can they coexist?
I mean, it does seem like we're always hearing about their relationship. They're getting along. They're not getting along. They like each other. No two players comment on a relationship more than those two guys comment on the relationship with each other. I still think it could work. I mean, Rudy Gobert frustrates you at times. Let's face it. How many times have you seen him being defended by a much smaller player and he's having trouble catching the ball, gathering himself under the basket, elevating and dunking over people?
I mean, Frank, he got targeted in that Dallas series. I mean, they 100%. Went small and you couldn't play with him on the court.
That's right. Luka Doncic was going at it. They wanted to get him in pick and roll the entire game. I know. I think there are teams that would want him. I mean, Danny Ainge is, for the most part, always worked with a center. I would tend to think that Danny Ainge would try to trade Rudy Gobert before he would try to trade Donovan Mitchell. I just think that's a team that's because a lot's going to happen. Let's face it. They had the best record in the West last year. And, they ended up getting knocked out in the second round to a Clipper team that didn't have Kawhi Leonard for the last 2 games. They're in a perfect position to at least get to a conference finals, and it didn't happen for them. So, the Quinn Snyder thing surprises me a little bit, just the timing of it, because their season ended so long ago. So that part of it is a little odd. But again, I think with Danny Ainge in charge there, I think a lot of things are going to happen.
Frank Isola, Yes Network, Sirius XM NBA Radio, joining us this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Speaking of Quinn Snyder, did he do the right thing, Frank? Did he do the right thing by getting out of Utah?
Well, remember, I mean, I think he's going to be – he's definitely going to get another job when – if and when one opens up relatively soon. You know, but you did hear about him being connected to the Lakers while the regular season was going on. So maybe he didn't want that job. Maybe, you know, the Laker job is the Lakers, but right this moment it's probably not the greatest job. Maybe he didn't want to be in a position to turn that down. But 8 years is a long time. Maybe he's thinking it's time to try something different. The guy's definitely going to be able to get a job sooner than later.
My man Frank Isola, Around the Horn panelist, joining us here on Keyshawn, J. Will & Max. Frank, let's go back to this game. Game two last night at the Chase Arena, which, by the way, it felt more like Oracle. It's like, oh, there are other fans. Welcome back to the series. I talked a lot this morning about the kind of job description of Draymond Green, right? Agitator, guy that provokes people. And he was at his finest moment last night in game two. And a lot of these aren't stats that will show up in the box score. But damn, like, he made his imprint on the game. What did you see from him in game two that was different than him in game one?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right about the agitator. I think the Warriors kind of approached that game like it was a game seven. Draymond was getting under everyone's skin. I thought the conversation between Mark Jackson, Jeff Van Gundy, and Steve Jaffe was fascinating about really what could have been a double technical, which would have ejected Draymond Green, you know, when he got into it with Jaylen Brown. But, you know, let's face it, we know that sometimes things do get officiated differently. Same thing in soccer. When a guy has his first yellow card, the referees know. So unless it's like something really egregious, a lot of times they're not just necessarily going to pull that second yellow card. It's very, very similar to last night. I thought Draymond Green did enough to get a second technical, but, you know, I think Zach Zarber and that crew didn't want that to be, you know, they obviously didn't think it crossed the line. But the way that he played last night was the way he has to play, and the way Steph Curry played. I still don't understand why back in game one, when you have all these days off between game one and two, why was Steph Curry only playing 38 minutes? What were we shading him for? Steph Curry couldn't have played 45 minutes. I thought the Warriors' arrogance kind of in game one came back to haunt them a little bit. And I think last night was more representative of the way that the team plays and knowing that they desperately needed to win. I don't think they're winning that series. If we've seen teams do it before, I don't think they're winning that series if they lost last night.
Yeah, when you look at it, Frank, you talk about Steph's minutes in game one and the arrogance. And I felt like that they were kind of, I don't know, lackadaisical at the same time, kind of just, oh, we got this. It's the Celtics. You know, we've been there, done that before. With that being said, though, two games in, what do you make of Steph's amazing performance? Talk on the point total-wise and also the second half of the second game.
Yeah, I thought, like, the ability to make plays is huge, and obviously everyone was talking about the way that he defended. I do think it's funny. There's been so much discussion. We never used to talk about who's going to be the Finals MVP before before a series even starts. And, you know, there's been so much talk about Steph, and he's had unbelievable Finals games, and he had to have that last night. But I thought his ability to make plays, you know, they kept showing that one replay where he's, you know, he dribbles into the paint, and then Andrew Wiggins is cutting to the basket. I just thought he did a better job making plays for his teammates, and I also think his supporting cast was a lot better than Jason Tatum's supporting cast was. Right. Again, I kind of felt that they treated that like a game seven. You know, Steph played 38 minutes in game one. He played 32 minutes in three quarters last night and obviously didn't have to play the fourth. But I thought when you talk about big, you know, big-name players playing big in big moments, that was Steph Curry last night.
Frank,
they needed that game.
There, we have, like, less than a minute right now, but my criticism has been, or my question has been, you know, without KD on the team, I have not noticed a lot of late-game heroics by Steph in games the Warriors have needed to win in the finals. I saw it last night. Is that something new for Steph, or are you claiming this is just par for the course for him? To me, that was something new.
Yeah, I do. I'll bet you that Game 7 loss to Cleveland stings for him a lot. You know, the most memorable moment was probably late in the game where Kevin Love was isolated on him and he really couldn't get a good shot off. So, you know, out of all the games that Steph Curry's played in his career, that has to rank up there as the most disappointing because they had the 3-1 series lead,
like
no Draymond
seconds,
in game
right.
in Game 5. But I agree with you. His, you know, that was Steph Curry last night.
That is Frank Isola this morning. Thanks as always,
thank you,
Frank.
Baby.
We're right back.
All right,
Frankie. In a matter of moments.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.